is for unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown preacher.
Beautiful people, welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA, the first episode of season 5, episode 137. God is so good. Today's episode is personal, is historical, and is very, 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 very necessary. And we're talking about historically Black colleges and universities, not just as institutions, but as movements, as safe havens, and as proof of Black resilience and brilliance. And my backup today, helping me wrap this thing in a ribbon, is family, y'all. So welcome her to the show for the first time, Reagan. How are you, Reagan?
Good.
Good, good, good. Welcome to the show. So for the listeners who might not know this, can you had some work you did on the history of our HBCUs. You're going to go over real quick. You want to do that?
Yes.
Yeah.
So first, I'm Reagan. Hi. And basically, I just did some research about how HBCUs are very important for the Black community.
Yes.
And here we go. So first, HBCUs were created to provide African Americans a chance for higher education when white-only schools wouldn't give us a chance. They're necessary because they're important to give students access to higher education during a time when there was segregation and discrimination. And the first HBCU was founded on February 25th, 1837, and it's the University of Pennsylvania. Mm. And moments where some of the HBCUs were threatened was a lot during the times where racism and extremism was going on, when we didn't have a safe place.
Yes.
And segregation changed. After segregation ended, it changed everything for Black communities because we were able to experience more things and better things. HBCU saw increase in African Americans coming to schools. It changed the crucial shift in educational landscaping for all education. And it was something that nobody was used to. So it really gave people a new idea of how education could change.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you plan to attend an HBCU when you graduate from high school, right?
Yes, I want to go to Winston-Salem.
Okay.
For my HBCU of choice. So I'm really looking forward to going on some tours and seeing other HBCUs as well.
Well, we have some great panelists here, so they can, maybe when you hear them share their experience, you'll also give their institutions a try as well, right?
Yeah.
Hey, so let's unpack this, because I know their time is valuable. And first, thank you, Reagan. You're a trooper, man. You're going to be an excellent member of the team. We appreciate you. Yeah. So let's unpack this, because in all of this, we're talking culture, legacy, the homecoming, the future, the marching bands, all of that good stuff. So let's get into it. First, let me introduce our panelists. All right. Our first panelist has been a guest before, and today he is representing North Carolina Central University. John Blakely, founder, host, and director of Jay Speaks, a YouTube podcast. And the purpose of his platform is to have real conversations with real people in order to share content to the world that is positive, motivational, educational, and informational. Please welcome to the Unknown Preacher LA, John Blakely, aka J Speaks. What's happening, brother?
How are you, Alonzo? Thank you for having me.
Hey, man, I'm good, brother. Thank you again. Next panelist, repping Fayetteville State University, is Trinity Goodman, first-time freshman, double major in accounting and psychology with a concentration in work and organization. Welcome, Trinity. How are ya?
Hi, I'm doing good. Hi, so nice to see everybody.
Good. Thank you. Next up. Well, let's see. He was supposed to come on. He just texted me, but I'm going to go ahead and introduce him because he's waving the flag for NCCU as well as Florida A&M. He's also been a guest on our show, Dr. Jonathan Livingston. Dr. Livingston is a professor of psychology at North Carolina Central University's psychology department. He received his MS from Florida A&M with a focus on African-American psychology. And his areas of interest are African-American psychological well-being and the cumulative effects of racism and social inequalities on African-American youth, mental health, and health disparities. We hope that Dr. Livingston will join us soon. All right. And our final panelist is Dr. Adriana M. Hooker, and she's representing Jackson State University. Dr. Hooker is a licensed, certified social worker, educator, and mental health advocate whose work centers on resilience, healing, and empowerment. She earned her PhD in psychology from, is that Walden University, Dr. Hooker?
Yes.
All right. And a master of social work from Jackson State. And she is also a social worker and sociology instructor. Welcome, Dr. Hooker. How are you?
Thank you. I'm awesome. Thank you for having me.
Amen. It's our pleasure. Thank you all for your time. We know it's valuable. So I'll say we appreciate you. And I'll start with the first question. So because we are so complex, HBCUs, we know they have so many meanings, and I think it depends on our backgrounds, expectations, our personal goals. So when you move away the rankings, the logos, the tradition, what does your HBCU represent in your own life? And I'll start with you, Jay.
Thank you for the question. First and foremost, I just want to clarify, I went to Howard.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought we talked about that.
No, okay. It's fine. I just want to make that clear.
No, thank you. Repping Howard, Jay Speaks.
But for me, the turning point for me, it was a turning point. I grew up in a predominantly white Asian community. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I had a lot of great experiences. I made a lot of solid friends at the time, mm-hmm. but you know, that cultural, longing was definitely missing.
Yeah.
And when you see, I don't choose my family. I don't choose where I'm born. I don't choose what school I go to. But when me by choosing Howard, it was like the first time in my life that I had the choice to pick my direction, my next step. And, you know, me deciding to willingly go to an HBCU, something that was polar opposite from what I was used to, most people would feel, you know, uncomfortable about that.
Yeah.
You know, you spent the last 17 years in an environment that although you were the minority, that was all that you knew. But I was eager. I was excited. I was longing to be a part of the majority and not a part of the minority. And yeah, Howard, to me, that signified or represented for me the turning point in my life when I kind of took the reins of my life and made that decision for myself. My parents were thankfully supportive. And I am so glad I made that decision. I feel like I'm more well-rounded. Mm-hmm. I feel comfortable with my people. Yeah. And I just love that experience. I don't think any PWI could mimic an HBCU feel. But yeah, that's me without being long-winded.
That's a great answer. Trinity.
For me personally, my HBCU means community, safety, and possibility. It's a place where I can see myself growing academically and personally, while also stepping into leadership roles, like serving as the freshman class treasurer. Wow. There was no other option for me. I definitely didn't even think of looking at a PWI. It was all HBCUs, and I was able to learn so much more about them while I was doing research on which school I wanted to go to.
Mm. Another good answer. And Dr. Hooker.
Yeah, so for me, my HBCU, I would say it represented belonging and becoming for me. I have attended PWIs as well, but it was just a place where I felt that my identity was taken seriously. There were others that looked like me, so I felt that I belonged. And though I went to an HBCU, a lot of people have this misconception about HBCUs, but one thing about it is I was challenged, mm-hmm. and I was supported. And so having others there that look like me, yeah. that still challenged me and supported me, brought me to where I am academically and personally right now.
Wow, I love that answer. And we're going to talk about misconceptions a little later on, so I'm glad you touched on that. And I feel robbed. I definitely have to share that because I did not get the HBCU experience. But I know from everything I've heard, I think the word that I hear is safe space, right? Like I imagine an HBCU being like the epitome of safe spaces. You know, I don't care who you are, where you come from. I think in that environment, and I think Jay touched on it a little, that like it's family, but I think at the PWIs or in America, I don't care what part of this country you're from. I think most African Americans have that moment where they felt or feel invisible. And y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there you definitely, it's just you're in a different world. Hey, that should be the name of a TV show. But yeah, you're in a different world, you know, so you're with people who can share those experiences. So thank you, thank you, thank you. The next question, and we talked about this too, HBCU versus PWI decision. So there are pros and cons, I guess, on both ends, and everyone's not meant to attend a PWI or vice versa. But what guided your decision to attend an HBCU rather than a predominantly white institution? And I'll start with you, Trinity.
For me, like I said, I didn't, when I was doing research on which schools I wanted to go to and what education I wanted, I definitely did not look at a PWI. But I chose an HBCU because I wanted to be surrounded by people who understand my experiences and encourage me to lead. Being in an environment rooted in Black excellence has made me feel confident taking on roles like student government and putting myself out there and joining organizations and joining clubs and stuff.
Love it. Love it. Yay.
So outside of wanting to be a part of the majority and not the minority, mm-hmm. I felt as though Howard was the only school and HBCU, because I applied to multiple, that mm-hmm. gave me a scholarship. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It just made me feel appreciated. It made me feel wanted. I felt it just felt good to get a scholarship to a university And it was my only scholarship as well. So that is definitely one thing that motioned me to go to Howard. Personal, I had a godfather and a godmother who worked at the school. So it was like a home away from home.
Wow.
I'm originally from New York. Howard is in Washington, D.C. So going back home would be easier. It was an easier commute. Yeah, those are the three reasons outside of just wanting to be around Black excellence.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, yeah. And Dr. Hooker, what guided your decision to attend an HBCU rather than a predominantly white institution?
Well, honestly, I just wanted to be in an environment where Black excellence is the norm and not an exception. Wow. So I wanted to be around others that look like me. I didn't want to be in an environment where I was the only one. I didn't want to be, you know, the DEI person like, oh, we have this person here. We just want to show you all that we offer inclusion. This is what we have. I wanted to be surrounded by others who look like me, share the same experiences as me, and we can learn and grow together. So I really just wanted to focus on learning and not have to worry about carrying the weight of representing the Black community.
Oh man, I'm loving these answers. That makes perfect sense. Thank you. Thank you. I'll just say this, you have to be there to see it. So what's a lesser known piece of your school's history that more people should be aware of? And I'll start with you, Dr. Hooker.
So one thing about the Jackson State University, but a lot of people do not know how deeply tied Jackson State University is to like the civil rights movement and Black political consciousness here in Jackson, Mississippi. So it has been a site of student activism, community organizing, and resistance. And often this happened under scrutiny and risk. And yet still since 1877, Jackson State University has been here.
Wow. Thank you. You and I are going to have to talk offline because I'm a history buff as Reagan is and would love to know more about that. That makes sense when you think about the civil rights movement, the Deep South, Mississippi. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Jay.
Some facts about Howard that I actually didn't know myself. It started off with 5 white students.
Okay.
And the person who founded Howard University was a white man, General Oliver Otis Howard. Yes, and he was also the first president. So those two things.
Interesting. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I see Dr. Livingston. Well, he's still having trouble connecting. I'm having trouble connecting him. He said he's in but can't hear. So I'm going to do like the Walls Group and pass the mic to Reagan.
Hub is located at 1409 Cross Street in Raleigh. Stop by Nature's 360 Cafe for your herbs, favorite acai bowls, smoothies, and juices. And join us for Mental Health, Wealth, and Wellness Mondays.
Come get your $25 fast.
In what ways does HBCUs continue Black resilience, and how does that help you with self-determination?
I would say that HBCUs, they foster a community-like, a family-like environment, a family-like culture. And through that culture of, you know, you're not alone, we're in this together, we're going to see it through, at least for me, in my discipline, and I'm sure in most disciplines and in most HBCUs, I did not feel alone. It was easy for me to make friends. It was easy for me to get along with people from vastly different parts of the country and the world. And, you know, with that type of energy in the air, that type of energy in the classroom, in the libraries, in the hallways, it just motivates you to want to see anything you put your mind to through, from an academic standpoint, from a club standpoint, an organization standpoint. Yeah. And that is something that I was definitely missing at my PWI high school. And I'm sure I would have been missing that in a PWI college or university, being heavily outnumbered. So that's my take on that question.
Good deal. Good deal. Dr. Hooker.
One thing about it, HBCUs were created by necessity, but they thrive because of intention. So the legacy continues by educating students or individuals who look like us that are often overlooked. And this basically reminds us that, you know, we don't need permission to define excellence. We can do it on our own terms. And so I feel that HBCU started that and they continue to do that to this day.
Great answer. So let's go with Dr. Livingston. Welcome, Dr. Livingston. I gave you a mad introduction, man. I mean, it was spot on. But the question that Reagan asked was, how do HBCUs continue to embody Black resilience and self-determination in the modern era?
That is a good question. And I want to thank y'all. I'm sorry it's running late. My car broke down. But it's one of those issues. But that's a really good question. How do we maintain that in contemporary times? And one of the ways is to continue to recruit those who understand the history and legacy of HBCUs to come there to teach, to be administrators, and to work. That we have to have that folks who understand that institutional history. Folks that understand, you know, what we're trying to do as educators at HBCU, and that is to put the best and the brightest in the world out into the workforce. 60% of all medical doctors start at an HBCU Black. 60% of all lawyers, 67% of all lawyers, 65% of all PhDs, they start at an HBCU. So something good is happening there.
Yeah. That's a great answer. I love it. I love it.
But you got to recruit people who understand this mission from the chancellor on down to that of the assistant professors.
Yeah. Makes sense. Thank you. Thank you. Trinity.
Yes, sir.
So, did you hear the question?
Yes. So, for me, I feel as though HBCUs continue the legacy by creating opportunities for students to lead, to serve, and to succeed despite limited resources and not having as many positive influences as in life sometimes. But they actively prepare us to be decision makers and not just participants.
Love it. Love it. Reagan, I'm handing you the mic back.
So next question. How important is representation in classrooms and in leadership spaces?
And let's go with Trinity on that one.
Representation is essential because it makes leadership feel attainable. Seeing Black leaders on campus, professors, faculty, staff, it has encouraged me immensely to reach for those roles and to reach for the stars and basically dream as high as I possibly can.
Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Livingston.
You're muted.
Oh, there you go. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah, representation of faculty, administrators, leaders that look like students is critically important. Those of us who went to PWIs, we may have had one or two black professors or administrators our entire life. So it's empowering when young people see, you know, deans who look like them, who come from their neighborhood, who went through some of the same struggles. It's important for them to see professors who come from their community, who look like them. It's inspiring. And so it's critically important that we continue to get folks who went to the HBCUs to come back, roll up your sleeves, and help educate this next generation of young people.
And what do you do to incentivize that? How do you get them to come back, Doctor?
Yeah, and that's been the task.
Yeah.
At HBCUs, one issue is that of salary, and that younger professors, younger professionals want work-life balance, and they want salaries, you know, commensurate to that particular area. So one of the things that we have to do as HBCUs is increase salaries of the professors so that we can draw and attract the best and the brightest. That's one thing. Yeah. Number two, when we're hiring these young faculty and they're coming out, given the increasing cost of housing, we need to make sure that we have loan officers there and low interest rate loans, because these folks are coming out with student loans. They're married. They may be married. They got kids. And so we want to make the professorate comfortable for them with a high salary, a low interest rate loan for the housing, in order to make it attractive. And you'll see PWIs have been doing this for years. Well, they'll provide incentives, housing vouchers for junior faculty that are moving there, because moving is extremely stressful and housing costs has gotten extremely expensive.
Wow.
So raising salaries, providing incentives, providing housing, and, you know, making sure that we maintain that inviting environment. As to when I came to Central three decades ago, they've been through with me with kids, my son going through cancer, divorce. HBCU faculty were there for me. Okay. I invite you to church, you know, come over and help you out with your house, with your kids.
Yeah.
And for the person who went to a PWI, I'm like, man, if I'd have had this all the way through, this kind of connection, you know, mentally, where would my space be? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. That's deep. Thank you. Thank you. What says Dr. Hooker?
Oh, I agree with Dr. Livingston. It's critical. It's critical that representation matters. So seeing professors and leaders and individuals who look like you, it really changes what you believe is possible. And so the representation, it doesn't just inspire us. It also validates our experiences, and it really improves the outcomes. Just being in a classroom with someone who looks like me, let me know that my goals are attainable, that I can be in a position that they are. So I think it's paramount that we see individuals that look exactly like us in the classroom, and also to have that support, understanding that they may have come from a similar background. So they're there to support you through your academic journey.
Wow. You all are saying an earful, man. I know people are appreciating the nuggets. Thank you. Thank you. Reagan.
Next question. How would you describe the culture and like life of HBCU in your own three words?
Let's go with Trinity.
Three words I would use to describe my campus is supporting, empowering, and ambitious. I feel as though my campus is definitely, we're definitely called Family University for a reason. You are definitely going to feel the support here and the empowerment here. And they're definitely going to want you to reach for the stars and encourage you to reach for the stars.
Wow. I love that. So you said that you call your institution Family University?
Yes, sir, because all of the staff and the faculty here, if you go to anybody here, it doesn't matter who it is, from the person who sweeps to the person who runs departments, mm-hmm. everybody is inviting and welcoming and wanting to help you and willing to help you. You ask them any questions. If they don't know it, they're going to point you in the right direction to somebody who can help you.
I love it. I love it. Dr. Livingston.
Yeah. This is what I love about it. I love it that we are able to do more with less. In 2024, our university, our psychology department in particular, was named number one in the country. I know that Carolina State, Harvard, Yale, and others have more resources, but my students have won over 30 awards. They published research in top-notch journals, and they go on the top-notch PhD program. So knowing that we do it in spite of resources, that's what I enjoy about it, that we're able to create the best and the brightest with far fewer resources than other folks. Does that make sense?
It does. That's the resilience and brilliance we've been talking about. So, man, very commendable. Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Hooker.
In three words, I would say that my HBCU is resilient, proud, and community-centered. Very involved in the community. Coming from Jackson, Mississippi, even individuals who have never been to college, Jackson State inspires us. It is one of our most prized positions here in this city. So very community centered, and we are very proud. And a lot of the individuals, everybody who has come from that university, they're resilient.
Thank you. Great answer. Jay.
Three words describe Howard University, at least when I went. Lively, bold, and unwavering. Wow. Lively, we know how to get down. We know how to have a good time. You know, don't get me wrong. We work hard and we play hard. There's a great balance there.
Yeah.
Bold, Howard has been named constantly, you know, the most fashionable HBCU. You have people coming all over the country, all over the world, just bold personalities, bold in their attire, just bold in who they are, confident in who they are. Which is nice to see. Definitely help just being around that energy, rubbing shoulders with people who are confident, help me with my confidence. And then unwavering support from the faculty, unwavering support from your classmates. Like I said, it's that community feel. You're not alone. We're in this together. Let's get it done. You know, those are the three words I would describe Howard.
Man, that's spot on. I love it. Good stuff. Good stuff. So I know in life we have regrets, right? And in the spirit of transparency, I think I shared that in the beginning that I felt like I really missed out. Didn't attend an HBCU. Wanted to, for a number of reasons, I guess I missed that boat and I regret it. But I want to ask you all this. Was there a specific moment when you realized, without a doubt, that you made the right choice? And I'll start with you, Dr. Livingston.
Ooh, that's a good one. I went to UNC Asheville undergrad. I did a master's at Florida A&M. I did my internship at Tennessee, and then I'm a doctorate at Michigan State.
Oh, man.
So I, you know, at FAMU, I had the experience, but it was a bit different because I was at the graduate level and getting a degree in psychology. Mm-hmm. Now, I realized that I was at the right place at North Carolina Central when a student, we were talking about vagrancy laws. Mm-hmm. And vagrancy laws were laws post-slavery where they would re-enslave Black men and Black women and have them do jobs because they did not have a job. The vagrancy laws, it was all over the South. And there was a student in there, as we were talking about it, he said to me, you know, Dr. Livingston, that happened to me in 1968. Well, me and some other guys were picked up and we were taken to work on this man's farm for no money, just food. My first couple of years were rough trying to adjust coming from major Big Ten PWI to HBCU, different resources, different process. But I knew after hearing that student who had came back to school in the 60s to finish his degree, hearing him say that let me know I was in the right place. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, to tell you that they were re-enslaved, and this was 1968, okay? Mm-hmm. This was not that long ago that this was a practice in Durham where young black men could be taken off the street and made to work on a farm for just food. And hearing that from a student, it clicked into me. If I had any doubts about why I was at a HBCU, they were gone after that. That it did it for me, just to be able to hear that history.
Wow. Wow. And I like what you said, because it wasn't that long ago. And I had a friend who told me something similar, where he worked for this. They took him on a truck out of in the middle of nowhere, and they were working on golf courses, and it was in the heat. And if you quit, you had to just sit there and wait until everyone finished. And for lunch, they drove them to a convenience store. So these stories are real, and they're not that long ago, like you said. Wow. Thank you so much. Dr. Hooker.
So I graduated from Jackson State University in 2021, and I know that wasn't long ago, but it was the support that I had from my professors, even after graduation. I remember having a professor who, when I did take her course, mm-hmm. and she commended me on my work, and I remember her asking, you know, I really love your work. Is it okay if I share it with the class? And that was the first time that I had been asked this. So I was honored. But she went as far as to say, you know, you're one of the best students I have ever had. Is it okay if I have your address so I can send you something? If you don't want to share it, that's fine. And I remember sharing it, you know, never having that experience before. And she did. Mm-hmm. And so even to this day, 2026, I can reach out to those professors and ask, hey, can I have a recommendation? Any support that I need, they were still there. When I needed a job, when I needed recommendations for a licensure, my professors, they wrote these recommendations for me after being there. And so I knew then, having that connection, having that support, though I'm no longer a student there, I'm an alumni, but to have my professors to still support me, and when they see my accomplishments and my accolades, that they still congratulate me to this day, I knew that is where I belong.
Oh, I love that answer. And thank you for returning and pouring back to an institution that poured into you. I was at a banquet yesterday evening. It was the Cook Society Awards banquet, and it was in honor of Professor Cook, who was the first professor at Duke University, first African-American professor. But one of the recipients of the awards said something, and it just resonated with me when she said, you know, she went there wondering if she belonged. And I think when you talk about the HBCU, there's no question. You am I right? Because, again, I didn't have the experience, but you feel like you belong, where you do question yourself. I would say many African-Americans question themselves at a predominantly white institution. Yeah, thank you so much. Jay.
So besides stepping on campus, I never forget, I was getting a tour by my god sister, actually. Besides stepping on campus and just being pleasantly overwhelmed by the Black excellence, the Black students, the Black professors walking by me, looking studious, looking fun, and just in their own world, what really kind of solidified, like, this is where I'm supposed to be, was when I attended my first Friday. I don't know if any other HBCUs have that. Mm-hmm. But it's basically the first Friday of every month. The cafeteria basically turns into a club, basically. And I've just never, again, coming from a PWI, one of four Black people in my graduating class of 160 people, I just never been in that environment before. And on a school campus, in a cafeteria, people, you know, eating wings, dancing, and just, it just was normal. Nobody was fazed at all. And I'm just like, wow, this is amazing. I was with my mom and my best friend from high school at the time. And we were just in awe. Like, blasting music. Nobody was batting an eye. And I'm like, wow, so this is really the culture here.
Yeah.
I was like, this seems so fun. This just seems, this just feels right. And I just remember driving back home from, not me personally, but, you know, in the car ride home from DC to New York, the whole entire time just reminiscing and thinking about that occurrence. I was just like, this is where I want to go. This is where I want to be. So, like, man, I said, lively and bold.
That's cool. That's cool. Trinity, can you top that?
I don't think I can top it, but I can definitely add to it. To me, it was really the moment I realized everybody was comfortable being themselves, and the lack of code switching. And I want to explain on that, because walking into classrooms and seeing leaders, seeing Black women, my professors being Black women with PhDs and masters and 6 degrees under their belt, but they speak to me like I speak to my friends, and yeah. I appreciate.
Man, I love that answer. It. I want to know, like,
sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, that was great. Any more you want to add to that? Because I want to know, is code switching still a thing? Do we still do that?
Yeah.
Oh, Dr. Hooker shaking her head. Yeah. Oh, I actually.
It depends, though. The, no, I would think so. But I guess me being more comfortable in myself and knowing everything that I've obtained and knowing that I do have knowledge, skills, and experience, I guess it doesn't faze me as much if I'm talking to someone that's not the same race as me, yeah, because I know what I know. Yeah. And so nothing is going to change that, because everything that I have, I've earned it honestly. And so if I decide that I want to talk in Ebonics or however I want to talk, then I'm going to talk like that. And nobody's going to change that. So yeah. I say, you know, it is what it is.
I love that. You know, I guess let me rephrase reframe the question, because, yeah, there are still people who partake in it. But I guess the question is, do we have to steal codes? Do we still have to code switch? Like, I think we're at a place where we no longer have to do that. But I may be wrong. And maybe geographical also. But I'm glad Trinity brought it up. And thanks for the follow-up on that, Dr. Hooker. This is the last one I'm going to ask, and then I'm going to turn it back over to Reagan. But I'm ashamed to say it. I already talked about not having the HBCU experience. And y'all didn't beat me up, so I appreciate that. But I hope y'all don't beat me up for this, because I'm going to be honest with y'all and say I have never attended an HBCU homecoming.
What?
I know. That's messed up, man. I'm going to work on, but my commitment in 2026, I will attend one. But, you know, people talk about it and saying it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And so I want to know from you all, what makes an HBCU homecoming so different? And I'm going to start with you, Dr. Hooker.
Well, let me say, homecoming is not just an event, okay? It's a family reunion. You hear me? Yeah. People who have never even attended college, you know, their family might have attended, their friends might have attended. Yeah. But you got the whole city, you got the alumni, you got the students that are there now, and everybody just show up. It's a culture, like, it's history. Yeah. And so we are proud, and we partake in activities that represent the HBCU that we've attended or that our family have attended. And so it's a week-long festivities. And there's no telling what you're going to do, but there's going to be a lot of partying, and there's going to be some games, and there's going to be some fun. But it's just the whole camaraderie that everybody get to come together and share this experience, being a part of a HBCU, however they are connected to the HBCU.
All right. All right. I'm gonna definitely jot that down too. And I know Jay got something to add. They getting down in the cafeteria at Howard. So what you got?
It's ditto to Dr. Hooker, but I mean it's the cafeteria experience times a billion.
Really, I mean, really.
It's a whole city event. It's funny because I can't even compare it to a PWI because like once I went to that homecoming, I had no reason to go to anybody else's homecoming.
Wow.
How do I explain it? I mean, there's a difference between walking by Black Excellence during just a normal school week versus walking by Black Excellence and just Black people, just Black.
Yeah.
All at one time, in a setting, crowd surfing, jumping, screaming. It's just like you're flowing with the current. Like you don't know, you don't really make plans. If you do make plans, 9 times out of 10, they're gonna get canceled or something's gonna happen. You just gotta be adaptable. I don't know. It was a great time. It was amazing. It's just everybody in just one space and one setting. Just Black love, just Blackness. I don't know. It was great.
Cool. I'm going definitely. Trinity, what do you have?
For my first homecoming,
yes,
it was an experience like no other. You're surrounded by people that look like you, who have went to your school, went through the same experiences that you have went through, graduated and came back to give back to your school, give back to your community and celebrate with you. It honestly feels like a reunion that honors the past while still celebrating the present.
Wow. Great answer, man. Okay. Now this is what I really want to hear what Dr. Livingston is going to say on this. Dr. Livingston, what do you have?
I'm here. I'm still here.
Yeah. Tell me, what do you have? Tell me about the HBCU experience. What makes it so different?
What's kind of different in that I grew up on the west side of Charlotte. So I was on Johnson C. Smith campus since 73, 74. Okay. And I was always a part of that. Like if they have homecoming now, I can literally go up to the table, not ask any question and get food. Okay. It was a family. I grew up there. Now, as a administrator and a fundraiser, homecoming is busy for me in that we want to plan an event for the older donors who can write a nice check. It's music. It's DJs. You know, we did fish and grits. We did pancakes and chicken wings. One day, and you know, we got the DJ, we got music. It's an all day event. I didn't have that at the PWI. I mean, I was not fond of bonfires, not to hate on them, but you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's what my thing, you know. And so, the HBCU homecoming experience is that it's a homecoming. I bring my grandkids. I get to feed them free. I get to feed all my kids.
Think
about come up for a parent. I don't know. You know, so you can't beat it. You know, yeah, I'm gonna hang with Papa today. You know,
yeah. Going to
the football game, get my face painted. I'm getting all the food I want. You know, and you get to see friends you haven't seen. I see people at a Central homecoming, A&T homecoming. I hadn't seen since third or fourth grade. You know, wow. It's like somebody you hadn't seen since the 1970s anywhere.
Wow.
And so,
go ahead, Doctor.
I said, when you it's like you're catching up 30, 40 years seeing people, and it is it's a family event. It really is like a family reunion. Really, it's amazing.
So, what looks different? Because you mentioned the 70s, man. I can only imagine. So, how does the 70s? How did they look compared to homecoming now? Like, or what differences do you see? I'm like curious.
I think the universities have grown. At that time, Smith was maybe 500. Central was maybe 2,500, 3,000. A&T was 7,000. Each one of those schools have doubled or tripled in size.
A virgin collard greens, squash and tomatoes, apples and okra and fresh sweet potatoes. $25 bag stuffed full of grub. These are the things at the Black Farmers Hub. Ooh, ooh. Onions and radishes, turnips and tamarind, turmeric and garlic and ginger's on hand here. Black beans, cucumbers, zucchini and hay. Let's not forget Nature's 360 Cafe. Fresh pressed juices, we've got smoothies, acai bowls too. From herbs to hoop cheese and wines made locally, it's at the Black Farmer's Hub.
The size of the crowd, the crowds uh-huh. have gotten much larger. Uh-huh. It's always been a family event where folks, you know, whether it's grandparents, now you see folks, the thing is I love about it is that you see folks across 5-6 generations.
Wow.
All there at the same time enjoying it. Fam, you, I remember the first time I saw it, I saw 17, 18 year olds, and I saw people in their 80s and 90s, and Parliament and Funkadelic was there. I know y'all may not know who Parliament and Funkadelic is, but yeah. It blew my mind, Chief. I'm telling you, when I saw it, it's like, okay, I get it. I finally get what this is about. This is a homecoming across 6 generations, and everybody came to hear George Clinton. And it was amazing. And I hadn't seen that at the White University. Use this as a separate event. It's not as big. We're isolated. And we try to do our own thing, but it's nowhere near what you see at the HBCU. And as I told you before, at no point has anyone at Tennessee, UNC Asheville, Michigan State said, hold on, we need to go see the band play. Yeah. I've never heard that. But at Central, when that band comes on, at FAMU, Central, A&T, we go see it.
Yeah.
But I've never heard that at a PWI. Never.
That's deep.
Let me go hear Notre Dame play some song. Ain't nobody ever said that. Never.
Oh, he went deep on us. Thank you, Dr. Livingston. So, Reagan, did I get everyone? I want to make certain. Yeah, I think I did. Reagan, I'm going to hand it over to you.
So how does Greek life influence your campus culture in the good ways and also the bad ways?
And let's go with Jay.
I don't know if I can talk too much about this. I was not a part of Greek life. Mm-hmm. From what I saw as a third party, it definitely gave a level of, it congealed the university or congealed us.
Mm-hmm.
It brought some sense of togetherness, some sense of pride. And it served as, I don't know. I don't know if I can speak too much about this.
Yeah.
I was kind of removed from Greek life.
No.
Nothing against it. I was just
no. That is fine. Is there anyone who can speak to it? If not, we'll go to the next question.
Yeah, and I may be a little biased because as a member of Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated, mm-hmm. To me though, Greek on the campus of an HBCU is more than just a social organization. I know people, you know, tend to join fraternities and sororities in search of sisterhood and brotherhood, and you're going to obtain those things as well. But we also are about service and scholarship and legacy and community. We do a lot of community service. And so just seeing so many D9 members being on the campus, being a part of organizations like development, community engagement, and just maintaining the tradition, I think it's very important. And it shows that we can all come together as one.
Mm-hmm.
And D9 has a lot to offer. it's not all just fun and games, because we do give back to the community. Very interconnected.
Gotcha, gotcha. Is there any area that you see for growth?
One, being an undergrad versus grad is going to be very different. Of course, age-wise, well, depending on, I mean, because you can join undergrad and be a non-traditional student, but just say something 20-year-old, whatever, in undergrad, crossing in Greek life versus grad chapter, to them is more so about the social piece. They do want to have fun, and they do want to party, and a lot of people think that that is all about that. And then when it's time to transition over to the grad chapter, where we do the community service, where we do the work, where we have these meetings and we handle business, you know, it can be a transition. But a lot of people that are not part of the Greek family tend to think that, oh, it's just this huge cult and we're praising somebody. And it's not that. It's not that. Everyone has their own identity. And everyone has different reasons as why they chose to join this organization. But on my behalf, from my perspective, I have only seen good and the great things that D9 has offered. Like we partake in, we just did the Habitat for Humanity. We do a lot of things throughout the year. And so just showing up and showing people that we are here to support you all in the community. We want to give back and we want you to know who we are and that we're more than just these letters and these colors.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hooker, for clearing that up. That was great. That was great. Reagan.
What was your welcome to college moment in your freshman year?
For me, personally, my real welcome to college was learning how to balance. First semester, I had a job, learning how to balance classes, work, student government, clubs, all events happening on campus, speakers coming to speak. It's never a dull day. It was definitely all the running around between all my different responsibilities and roles and figuring out how to manage everything. That was when it really got real, like, oh, you're in college.
Yes, yes. And you're the freshman in the group. You're the, so I really take to heart what you say on that. Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Livingston.
First moment I realized that I was in college. Chief, it's a bit different. I didn't start college until I was 23. I was married with kids. Mm-hmm. And I had a different approach in that I treated college like a job, in that I had to work because I had kids. I was married. And so it was like a job for me in that. And that's the way I approached it. I did have an opportunity to work with an amazing group of Omegas, because I worked in community centers, working with children in the community. And I had a group of young men who needed a letter for their charter. Okay. They would cook for me. They would do the music, DJ and bodyguard, and collect the money. And all I had to do was the letter. I can still consider today one of the greatest, use of labor I have ever had, you know, just for a letter. I mean, I get a security guard, I get y'all to cook, and you do the music for me and clean up. Yeah. It was amazing. And that group of Qs on the west side of Charlotte, in Tallahassee and in Michigan and Tennessee, they just were active, and all they needed was a letter. You know, it was this is all we need. You know, you sure I can get y'all some money for this? No, we good, Doc. We good. We good. You know, this is what we got to do. And this is the service that they do. And I think more community-based organizations, centers, that we need to utilize them, because folks need to see college students, but in particular, one that's about service.
Yes, yes. Well said, well said. Dr. Hooker.
I would say it was definitely an adjustment because I did attend Jackson State University for the grad program for my MSW. And so before going there, I had obtained my associate's degree some years prior, and my bachelor's I did online. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to grad school and it was in person, and so it was an adjustment. I remember taking evening courses. We had to go once a week. It was 6 to 8:45. And walking into those classrooms, it just felt like I was like in high school or something all over again. You know, I was, 24 mm-hmm. going there. And, you know, it's all ages. It's non-traditional when you go to grad school. So it can be ranging from 21 to 80. And just going there, I was like, wow, this is a different experience. I'm here with all these people that look like me. And now I need to figure out how to manage this all. Going to the class, how can I do this work when I leave the class? I need to pay attention in class. And then I want to make sure that I'm doing good and really get to know my professors and do my internships. And it was just so many things going on, but just learning that balance and how to manage my time. And it was really just me adjusting to adulthood overall, even though I was an adult, just the balance of at the time, I already had 2 children and a husband. Wow. And so I was like, oh, wow, I got to do all of this. So, you know, it all turned out well, but it was just the point of something being so new and how can I balance this and come out on top.
Wow. Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Jay.
My welcome to college moment, freshman year, was falling asleep in the library preparing for a chemistry exam.
Yeah.
And going in there by myself, studying in the library by myself, and waking up in the middle of the night by myself, no one there to like tap my shoulder or anything, just knocked out. And I said, well, this is what college is about, you know. My whole staying in college, I used to tell myself 4 years of sacrifice for a lifetime of happiness. You know, I just got to get through these. I got to get through these 4 years. And then, you know, hard work pays off versus the latter, you know, 4 years of fun for a lifetime of pain and sorrow and disappointment, which unfortunately a lot of people take that route.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was serious. I remember it like it was yesterday, waking up in the library, or I should say in the computer lab.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday morning. I'm walking back to my dorm for a power nap for 3 hours so I can get up, shower, and go to class.
Wow. Well said.
ROTC in the morning.
Oh, yeah. That's rough. Man. Thank you. Thank you. Reagan's last question. What you got, Reagan?
What's the biggest misconception about HBCUs?
I love this. Trinity.
For me, I would say that they aren't academically rigorous when in reality they truly, truly are. It definitely depends on your major, but they definitely are. The classes aren't easy. However, they do provide a lot of support as well.
I totally agree. I know in my undergrad, our professor was a minority student at a HBCU. And that's what he said. He was comparing our institution to North Carolina Central. And he was saying, man, you guys have it easy. We were in there whining. And he said, you guys have it easy compared to what I had to go through at Central. So, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, Reagan, you want to try to ask that again?
What's the biggest misconception about HBCUs?
Dr. Hooker.
One of the biggest misconceptions would be that HBCUs are unorganized and that they're mm-hmm. academically inferior, because mm-hmm. that is not true. people think, oh, because you went to an HBCU, you had it easy. No, nobody was giving out grades. They were not saying, you get an A, you get an A, because we all look alike. It just did not work like that. You were going to do the work and get the grade that you deserve, or you were going to fail that course. And so the truth is, HBCUs, we do more with less. So, you know, we still produce doctors and lawyers and professors and leaders. So many individuals who are celebrities and things of that nature graduated from HBCUs. So, you know, I hate the misconception that, oh, nothing is going to get done. Oh, you know how it is. That's the first thing that people say about an HBCU. Oh, you already know how it is. And that, I mean, the thing is, you're going to have issues no matter where you go. But I don't want people to think that this, what they are thinking about the program and the school itself is true, because it's not. And we have to work just like other individuals to get what we want.
Thank you. Thank you. Well said. Jay.
Yes. I did a Trinity and Dr. Hooker. It's just very interesting how PWIs, they're public white institutions and they're majority white. But HBCUs, we're majority black, but for some reason, you know, since we're majority black, we're taken less seriously than a majority white school. Like, just because of the color of the school is one way, then the education is one way, the professionalism is one way, the culture is one way, and it's just not true at all. I knew a lot of people, like, for example, coming from a PWI high school, I tried to motivate and encourage the very few black kids in my school to, you know, come to Howard so that we can go to school together. We can be in that environment together. We could share that experience together. And although they wanted to attend and they wanted to, you know, attend Howard with me, their parents, you know, again, we're all raised in this predominantly white community. Their parents believed in the notion that this black school, this HBCU, is not going to be taken as seriously as a PWI. So even though their children wanted to attend Howard University, because I took, when I was talking about the whole First Friday event, I had that tour with my best friend from high school, and he had the same experience that I had. And when I went to my mom and I told her about my experience, she was accepting of that. But when he went back home and told his mom, she said, "What? People were dancing in the cafeteria?" You see, you see what I'm talking about? You see, like, we both had an outer body experience almost. And then we both go back to our families with that same enthusiasm and that same just recollection of just what happened. And my parents take it one way and their parents take it the totally opposite. But that's the norm. That's the culture. Even within our community, even within the black community, it's not just white people or Caucasian people talking down about HBCUs. You have black people talking down about HBCUs.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's the problem. That's the misconception. And, you know, we got to stop that. Like we talked about, the majority of the lawyers, the majority of black lawyers, majority of black doctors, and so on and so forth, come from HBCUs. So we're doing a lot. And like Dr. Hooker said, we're doing a lot with less. So I don't know what it takes. I mean, the numbers don't lie. But hopefully over time we can unwind this misconception. So.
Man, I love those answers. Reagan, what do you think so far? I mean, I know you were leaning towards Winston-Salem State. Have any of them swayed you?
Well, listening to all of this really makes me want to go to HBCU more. Because, like, for me, education is very important. But when you can learn from people that look like you, and you're not looked sideways because you might know more than the person beside you, it really makes me feel like I could find peers and community, but also find myself around more people, because I go to school in a predominantly white area and all I know is white people. and I don't have many, there's not many diversity, but with HBCUs, I feel like I could find that diversity and still feel comfortable as a Black person.
Man, I love that answer. And if you want more exposure to the culture, all you got to do is call Uncle AZ. You know, I got you, right? Yeah. Hey, it has been a pleasure, all four of y'all. We lost Dr. Livingston, but all four of you have been stellar. I appreciate you more than you know. And when we come back, we're going to have part two of the HBCU experience. With some more representation. Any final words from you all before we go to a commercial? Anyone? Well, if not, on behalf of the Unknown Preacher LA podcast, we thank you. We appreciate you. We love you. See you when we see you, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Don't forget to follow the Unknown Preacher LA podcast. We're on all podcast platforms.
It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown preacher.